It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Wednesday morning, August 31st, 2016. I'm Steve Cole, live in our Carbondale studios with News Director Gavin Dahl. Good morning, Gav.
Good morning, Steve. The brand new KDNK website will be up and running later today. We still have more work to do migrating archives and adding some new functionality, but we're really excited about working with NPR Digital Services to bring you, dear listener, better access to music and news on the go. You can check it out at kdnk.org soon. Not quite there yet. They're doing the flip here this morning. And get your membership renewed before the pledge drive starts on Monday. You can do that, of course, right there on the website. 15-year-old Jack Split, the teen who helped change medical marijuana law in Colorado, has died. Crippled by debilitating pain from cerebral palsy, Jack insisted on attending school, and his mother and doctors insisted treatment in the form of THC patches and tinctures helped make that possible. He won over lawmakers and the governor. The legislature passed Jack's Law, which requires schools to allow parents or approved providers to administer cannabis medicine to children with prescriptions while on campus. Jack started high school in Wheat Ridge last week, but succumbed to the pain Wednesday. The state health department is launching a new $7 million campaign to help adults talk to kids about recreational marijuana use. Dana Cronin from KRCC Colorado Springs reports.
Risks of underage marijuana use can include both legal and health issues. The $7 million campaign focuses on how adults can be a big influence on adolescents. Allie Maffey manages the retail marijuana education program for the state. She says a major concern is that 1 in 5 adolescents is using marijuana.
To be able to have informed conversations with those 4 out of 5 youths about why they should continue not using, and with that 1 out of 5 youth to have conversations about what they may be risking.
The campaign will be available in both English and Spanish and will utilize radio, television, and online social media outlets to reach parents, teachers, coaches, and other adults who might be struggling with preventative talks. Funding comes from taxes generated through retail marijuana sales. For KRCC News, I'm Dana Cronin.
On today's feature, Solar Energy International Executive Director Kathy Swartz talks about their training program called Solar Ready Colorado.
Solar Energy International was founded in 1991 right here in Carbondale as a nonprofit educational organization. Their mission is to provide industry-leading technical training and expertise in renewable energy to empower people and communities. They're now headquartered in Paonia. My guest is SEI Executive Director Kathy Swartz, who was recently recognized as an action hero through the Clean Energy Education and Empowerment Initiative. Today, we're going to learn more about a unique program called Solar Ready Colorado. Thanks so much for speaking with KDNK, Catherine.
Thank you for having me, Gavin.
I want to start by just asking you about your backstory. Is it true you took a class from SEI long before you ever worked there?
Actually, yes, that is true. I did take a class before I started at SEI, and it was a women's only workshop. At the time, I was running a large environmental education center in the Bay Area, and we were teaching elementary and middle school students about solar energy, but this just took my knowledge to a whole other level and really got me thinking about how renewables could really have an impact on climate change and also spur economic development and just like the greater potential that renewables have.
Many years later, you took over as executive director. Now, flash forward to the present, tell us about Solar Ready Colorado.
Just a few months ago, we received a $401,000 matching grant from the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment. And Solar Ready Colorado, which is the name of this program, is really designed to market SEI's training to existing folks working in the industry who need to be upskilled. So as this industry is rapidly changing, we want to make sure that our existing folks working within the solar industry have the skills to keep up with the rapidly changing technology. In addition, it's designed to do outreach about the potential of solar energy to folks who currently aren't employed in the solar industry. So we're looking at targeting transitioning service members, unemployed folks, people who currently are living in poverty. And so we really want to attract a greater diversity of people to work within the solar industry. And that's what this grant is helping to cover. It does not cover tuition. It's really about the marketing and the outreach to these different populations.
So it took a long time to get to 1 million solar users in the U.S., but the growth is rapid at this point, and I've heard that the numbers could double in just a few years. Does this mean there's a shortage of solar workers with proper training?
It depends on the location. In the western part of Colorado and Peonia, there's currently not a shortage of workers because our solar market is still very small. But in the Front Range, there is a shortage of skilled and trained solar workers because obviously the market is so much bigger over there. And so we're really being very specific about where we're targeting so that we don't tell people they're going to get jobs if there are no jobs that exist in that area.
Kathy Swartz, Executive Director of Solar Energy International. Miners and oil and gas workers can encounter hard times as carbon-based energy economies boom and bust. What do the impacts of that look like up close in Delta County?
So up close in Delta County, there have been about two of our three mines that have closed down. So that's left about 700 unemployed people, unemployed miners and auxiliary workers because of the shutdown of these mines. What we've seen in our classes last year and this year is a lot more unemployed oil and gas workers and a few unemployed coal miners. We recently had one fellow from Delta, Colorado, who was able to take advantage of funding through the local workforce office, and now he's working in the solar industry here in Delta County. But he worked in the mines, he worked in the oil and gas industry, and now he feels like this is where he belongs in the solar industry.
And didn't SEI also spin off an entire training program focused on Spanish speakers?
We did. So we got a U.S. State Department grant back in 2013, and the whole premise of this grant was to start a Spanish training program aimed in Latin America. And since that time, we've trained over 2,500 folks from Latin America and from U.S. on how to design and install solar electric systems. In fact, it's really fun because in about a month from now, we'll have over 20 prominent people coming here for a design and installation hands-on training, and it's all taught in Spanish. And it's this wonderful class that happens in Peonia.
One more question for folks who have a residence and they're looking at doing rooftop solar. What's Solarize all about?
So in response to the coal mines closing, SEI's board of directors, they gave us the mandate and said, we need to drive economic development. And so SEI has been lucky enough to receive funding for AmeriCorps Vistas. And the premise of AmeriCorps Vistas is to help reduce poverty. So how we're utilizing our Vistas in Delta County is we've started Solarize Delta County. It's an outreach program where we've done outreach to over 1,000 people in Delta County to expose them to solar. What does this mean? What are the financials? And then with that, it's a group buy-in. And in the last 2 years, over $1 million has been invested in Delta County by locals putting up PV systems. And much of that would not have occurred without the Solarize Delta County effort. Because of that, we've had 6 new solar jobs created here in Delta County, which is a big deal. And it's only just the beginning. And our next step in this program is to start large-scale PV development so we really can start to generate more jobs in the area.
Kathy Swartz, Executive Director of Solar Energy International, thanks so much for speaking with KD&K.
Thank you for having us, Gavin.
For KD&K News, I'm Gavin Dahl.
This is KD&K Carbondale. Thousands are turning out to support a protest against an oil pipeline on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. Local women are heading there Thursday with a carload of fresh local produce and water. KD&K's Amy Haddon Marsh has more.
A protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota began in late July when members of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe filed a complaint and injunction request in U.S. District Court to stop construction of the project. The pipeline proposes to bring up to 570,000 barrels of crude oil a day from North Dakota's Bakken oil fields to pipelines in Illinois. Earth Justice, a legal group representing the tribe, puts forth in the lawsuit that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the permitting agency, violated the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, the Clean Water Act, and the National Historic Preservation Act. It's a complicated issue, but basically boils down to treaty violations, whether the pipeline should be permitted to cross the tribe's ancestral lands, and clean water. The pipeline would cross the Missouri River, a major water source for the Standing Rock Nation, and that's just what inspired Roaring Fork Valley resident Caroline West to organize a fresh food and water collection to support the protesters on the reservation.
There's a few people in this country that are willing to stand up and say, you know, water's more important, and I want to support this thing. I think it's really important.
West and her daughter Josie Castaldo put out the call this week on Facebook for food and water containers. West plans to leave Carbondale Thursday, but she isn't quite sure what to expect once she gets close to the protest.
I've heard some things like the main road's closed. I'm nervous about that. I'm not very good at confrontation with authority and stuff like that, but I believe in what I'm doing, and that will press me on.
Neither West nor Castaldo have been to large protests before. West has some experience with Occupy Aspen, and her daughter has been to a protest or two in Washington, D.C. and New York. But Castaldo says the mission is to give food and water to those in need.
We're taking water containers in the car that will probably fill up once we get there. That's our biggest concern at the moment, is that they don't have access to water. And then whatever food we can get that's easy to eat and hopefully fresh and local is another goal.
West believes we need to start thinking in a radically different way about our dependence on oil. She says alternative energy jobs and training can replace jobs based on fossil fuels. West is driving a Prius to North Dakota, but says driving in general is a problem.
Maybe we can, you know, stop thinking we have to drive everywhere. Everybody has to be all individual about everything.
Caroline West will leave Thursday for North Dakota and will accept donations at the Carbondale Food Co-op until the end of the day today. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
Amy Haddon Marsh leaves for the Standing Rock protest on Thursday. We look forward to hearing more from her on KDNK next week.